This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Hi, thanks for coming out.
Mural Arts Program. Well, let's talk about Anti-Graffiti Network, shall we, for half a second? When the Anti-Graffiti Network came on the scene, there was a gentleman named Gordon Spencer, right? Gordon Cooper, sorry. I always conflated those names. There was Tim Spencer and there was Gordon Cooper. And Gordon Cooper had the idea of taking writers and their spray cans and putting them in front of a wall and making them make constructive work for the community that wasn't just, but was, you know, making work that engaged the community, that community could take ownership of. Problem with graffiti is it's, you know, it's just, it's a name, it's taking ownership of a wall illegally, which is what we love about it. But it's also that it creates, at the same time, that name, that logo placement, it's not much different than if Coca-Cola did it, or if, you know, some other brand that, I mean, the great thing about graffiti is it doesn't ask you for anything than acknowledgement of this name, but for most people, with their own lives filled with children wanting acknowledgement and colleagues and coworkers wanting acknowledgement, graffiti became this one more voice demanding acknowledgement that it really never transcended that for a long time. And Gordon Cooper saw the energy and he saw the positivity of these kids and he wanted to give them the opportunity to paint using the materials that they were familiar with, you know, in a context that the community was comfortable with. And what's amazing is there's a few pieces from that era that Sub did that still are extant where, you know, he used the spray paint and he used his vocabulary of speaking. And these murals are now some of the oldest that were done in the canon of PAGN/Mural Arts murals. And they're still, they still have power. They still hold their space. And it's really interesting to see. When Mayor Good came into office and he put Tim Spencer in charge, I remember watching TV as a very impressionable 16-year-old that I hadn't really set for myself the course that I wanted to take. And I remember Tim Spencer saying, you know, he was being asked, well, what about the positive graffiti? What about the political graffiti? The artistic graffiti? And Tim Spencer said, there is no artistic and no political graffiti in the city of Philadelphia. And I thought, that's an angle. I could work with that. That'll be my niche. And I really took it to heart. And I really thought, well, there's probably 100 other kids thinking the same thing. But apparently I was the only one. There were a few that I think grasped the possibility of being creative for the period that they were painting on walls. But it wasn't a lifelong pursuit. We saw so many, and Jane will attest, we saw, herself and myself, saw hundreds of really positive, creative, genius-level, independent youth just get sucked into drugs and crime by the time they turned 18. It was like graffiti was kind of like this Logan's Run kind of a scenario where as soon as you turn 18, you just exploded into crime or drug addiction, and that was it. We never heard from you again. And when I thought about all the super positive, creative people that were inspiring to me, just fully disappearing, it really broke my heart. And I figured, well, you know what would be interesting is keeping my head screwed on straight and spending the rest of my life being creative and somehow transcending this crime, drug scenario, violent scenario, and going off and doing creative, interesting things with, I mean, graffiti has it all. It's got line, it's got color, it's got design. It's got some pretense of communication, so why can't you make a living out of this? Why can't you make at least a life out of this? Maybe not a living. As a three-year-old, from the time I was three to the time I was, you know, 41, I was told that, you know, there's really no money in this art thing. You should really think about maybe plumbing, contracting, electrician. And, you know, my mother would say, oh, you're so talented, and that's a problem, because what do? You're going to have to answer your muse, and there's not going to be a whole lot of money in it, so good luck with that. Hopefully your brothers and sisters will slide you, you know, carfare loans when you need them. Now, when I met Jane was in overalls, well, maybe not overalls, but definitely paint-splattered clothes, definitely working every day, climbing scaffolding, painting walls, and having to navigate the bureaucracy of government, community overseeing the murals that they were doing, and at some point, maintaining her square as an artist and maintaining her position as a creative person, and just having to navigate, like, I couldn't imagine having Tim Spencer as a boss. I couldn't even imagine having him as a friend. Rest in peace, Tim Spencer. Because he really did a really important thing in making this organization, you know, PAGN, he made it, a city organization that was recognized nationally as changing the status quo, which was nothing at the time. And I think he'll always have a place in the memory of the city as a person that did that. However, as a 16-year-old punk, I thought he had nothing for me and he was just trying to quash all my dreams. But Jane found a way to work with him, to navigate, to make art on her terms as best she could and make it happen for herself. And I figured, okay, great, she's handling that. I'm going to go do this other thing. I've already assigned myself the task of becoming a creative adult without exploding into jail or drugs, so that's enough for now. I don't need to join the network. It's fine. I don't need to sign that pledge that says I will never write on walls ever again. Like, why would I do that? And, you know, I would have these visions as a 16, 17, 18-year-old youth of thinking to myself, well, why can't I just be this creative person? They give me a license to paint where, you know, wherever it's abandoned or wherever it's just, like, decrepit and falling down. And Jane would say, oh, we're working on it. It's going to take time, you know. Jane really was just the worker, just handling business on a day-to-day and making it happen. And I just figured, all right, when she's got the infrastructure in place in 25 years, maybe we can come back and talk. And that's literally what happened. Like, I just waited until Jane set the table, and then I came back, you know, with a fork and knife. And it really was, you know, Jane really had the vision of this happening. She had it then. But she also had the pragmatic, practical, structure to make sure. She knew what it would take was just slow, slow, incremental process. And I had no patience for any of that. So I pursued the things that I had to pursue, which was, at the time, I was publishing a graffiti magazine in Philadelphia. And what was a really eye-opening experience was, for all the graffiti writing I did in Philadelphia, I was very minimal in my impact. I thought abandoned buildings are good. Structures where there's already graffiti are fair play. Anything else is off the table. Houses, cars, worship, houses of worship. None of that interested me. What I was interested in was taking neglected spaces, blighted spaces, and making them better. That was my thing. I was started writing graffiti as a 16-year-old. I had two older sisters that would just rain hellfire down on me if I did the wrong thing. And I had to sell it to them. Like, before I started my illegal renegade career as an artist, I had to make sure it passed the smell test of my two very moral, upstanding older sisters. And they said, okay, abandoned properties are all right. So that was my calling. Now, you know, so this went on for as long as I was in Philly and I was painting these spaces. And I might have colored outside the lines a couple times. But what got me into most trouble with the police department wasn't that. It was the fact that I was publishing a magazine promoting the art, and or the medium, I should say. And I was making a video that promoted the medium, because that's when it really became, I wasn't just influencing myself and my small crew of people. Now I was really building mass appeal for what I was doing. And all kinds of alarms went off. And it was really kind of an interesting period where, okay, now that I've made the transition out of just, you know, unlawful reprobate, and I'm moving into publishing and all the things that require being, you know, a publisher, if you're publishing a magazine, you don't really have time to write on walls. There's advertising, there's layout, there's writing articles, there's, you know, in terms of video, there's editing, shooting. And, you know, I figured it was really interesting that as long as I was committing crime on a small level, that was fine. But as soon as I was being legitimate in what I was doing and striving for legitimacy, but at the same time maybe influencing other people to pursue the unsavory aspects of expression, then I got really dangerous. And there was some things set in motion where they went and raided Baines and Tamaro, retired, longly admired, understood, good at their job, anti-graffiti police. They went and you know, raided a friend of mine and were looking for me. And at the same time, I got wind of it, and I had an arrest warrant that I had to squash. You know, I had a friend of mine who was just in a moron punk rock band, and he did everything, my code of ethics in terms of where I wrote graffiti. This guy was like, he was the guy who was like for spray painting businesses on South Street with his band name and doing, just getting me in so much trouble. And when the cops came to get him, they found me and they said, well, one's as good as another. And with you, you know, you've always been good. You never really got on our radar, but this works for us. We don't care. It's not you. We're just taking care of the case. Like, you're done. So I took the charge, was really upset about it. And then just in the greatness of Philadelphia, I just stayed out of trouble for 5 years. It was easy to do. And then I didn't go to court. I didn't have anything to do with it. Until they went to my friend's house looking for me and gave him a hard time, gave his mom a hard time. They genuinely didn't know where I lived, so the cops went away empty-handed. And then I immediately went down to arraignment court the next morning, and I said, I need a court date. And ironically enough, I knew the arraignment court judge. And I was able to get a court date. And I told him, I was like, I'm going to school. I'm moving to New York. I need a quick court date. It's August. I need to be out of here by September. He just ignored me. When it was my case was called, he says, okay, I want this case adjourned in 3 weeks. And the DA is like, the arresting officer is on vacation. He can't get back before September 15th. Judge says, it has nothing to do with me. I want this case handled by the end of August. So, lo and behold, I'm in a courtroom waiting for Officer Baines to arrive. Officer Baines shows up with a box of everything I've ever done in terms of magazines and videos and artwork and everything else. And my lawyer and the judge have been talking for 20 minutes about golf and, you know, this course and that course. So when Baines comes in, he's just like, I've got a case. I've got this whole thing to present. They're like, we don't have time for that. This guy's out of here. Like, he's not guilty. You need to, you know, this case is 5 years old. He hasn't gotten in any other trouble. Like, you've got nothing to stand on. So Baines pulls me aside and he says, okay, I'll let this whole thing slide, but you've got to paint the rec room next to the precinct in South Philly. I was like, sure, I'll paint the rec room. No problem. You know, I'll see you. I'll come by Monday. Is Monday good enough? All right, see. So I'm sorry, Officer Baines, I never came by. I moved to New York. Good times, right? So moving to New York, you know, I pursued the magazine published in New York, great time, you know, very, very busy time. Magazine went out of business in 1997. I went back to the only thing I knew how to do, which was painting graffiti. And I really started my artistic practice then and opened up a studio and started really making art. By 1999, me and Jane were almost reunited with a show. It was called, Wall Power? And it was, we won a grant from PEI under, Alex applied for part of it, Mural Arts applied for part of it, Fleischer Art Memorial applied for part of it. It was a joint grant given out. And we set up an exhibition at the ICA called Indelible Market that touched on all the things about graffiti and marketing that were prevalent at the time. And I remember seeing Jane walk through the show and just like in the corner, like, there she is, she's coming through. And it was like really interesting where she was just like, you know, and I think she was shaking her head, I think, at that point. It was just like, it was kind of overwhelming for both of us. And at the same time, it kind of gave it portended to what could happen. You know, again, Jane working incrementally on what she had to do and me in broad strokes doing what I had to do as an artist. And that was just, you know, I've done things like in 2004, 2003, I started the Dreamland Artist Club where I was painting signs and amusements and rides in Coney Island. I provided signage for about, you know, myself and 40 other artists provided about 100 signs for rides and amusements at Coney Island. I got to paint the Cyclone roller coaster, which was a huge, it was like painting pinstripes on the Yankees. It was that huge. And, you know, in the train culture of New York history, to actually paint the Cyclone train was really huge. And it brought new life and vitality to this really beautiful, if decrepit, community on the edge of Brooklyn. And, you know, it was just, but it was just more ammunition for this project, ultimately, in that, you know, art can transform communities. Art, you know, when it's applied in practical ways, you can do a lot with a community, you know, especially in something simple as providing signs. You can do something, you know, really direct financial impact. I also, the year after that, I did the waterboard thrill ride in Coney Island, which was an animatronic display that you walked up on, you put a dollar into a slot, and you peeked through a window, and for 60 seconds you got to see one robot waterboard another robot. Fun for the whole family. So, you know, I was able to experiment and do these things and, you know, explore just the wildest reaches of my mind. At the same time, when we did the Coney Island project, you know, it brought home to me what Jane was saying all along was the fact that if you're going to paint in a community, you got to get the community involved and you got to be there for it. You know, graffiti acts as like this signal on the outside of the community that broadcasts to the center. And when you're painting signs and you're working in the community to give them what they need, you're actually working from the center of the community and you can broadcast out to the periphery where the graffiti writers are. And it was a way more powerful and way more transformative experience. And in doing it, it made me realize that, you know, there is some you can make legitimate art in a community context. And honestly, for a long time, like, I really didn't think it was possible. You know, and I thought that Mural Arts as a program was like a great civic organization. And it really is. It's an amazing civic organization. But it took me a really long time to realize, like, really the artistic genius of it in terms of representing community's vision and representing everything. And it really does go back to the Mexican muralists. Like, they did it. You know, they really, I'm not sure Diego Rivera was big on community meetings, but I know that they were really, they entrusted themselves with voicing the community and really being the voice of the community in a way that most artists don't. Most artists are just themselves, and they just want to concern themselves with their viewpoint. So thanks to Jane working as hard as she was working in Philadelphia and me doing whatever I was doing in New York, we got to a point in 19, you know, maybe it was around 2002. It was later than that. It was probably 2003 or 4 when I saw Market Street was closed off. Businesses were just bleeding out of the Market Street area. All the walls that I had painted on as a youth of 16, 17, and 18 were painted brown. And it's just like, it just was really just the blood had drained out of the community completely. And it was at that time that, you know, I was talking to Paula. We had maintained a dialogue since we had done the Wall Power exhibit, and I presented her with the idea of painting an entire neighborhood at the same time. And she said, okay, well, you're a little bit of a renegade. You probably need to work with a community organization that I can give money to, like the Mural Arts Program, and it'd be good for you. And it'd be good for Mural Arts to be a little more renegade, and it'd be good for you to, like, you know, straighten up and talk to the community and be a little more of a team player. All right. So, and it really has been, you know, almost a year of team playing. I'm a little exhausted. But and they are too. Mural Arts, I got to say, God bless them. I know it's been really a strain on them as well. But I think, you know, in us really stretching and expanding our parameters and finding new places for us, we've been able to make this project happen. So enough words. Let me show you some of these awesome images. If you were here, I'd be home now. This is at 5101 Market Street. Meant to be evocative of the refrigerator with the magnets on it. I think it succeeds. As we were finishing priming the wall, a sidebar about Josh Smith, who's tireless mural arts employee. Josh Smith virtually painted this whole wall by himself in about a day and a half. And you can paint this wall with a power sprayer in about 30 minutes. In man hours, it probably takes about 30. And Josh managed to do it in about 14 or 15. And we were pretty dumbfounded at that. As we were finishing up priming it, we were continuously asked. This was like the day that Michael Jackson passed. And people asked us if we were going to do a memorial for Michael. One helpful man said, all you really need to do is the glove. Just do the glove. But what we did instead was we snuck in his name over here. MichaelJacksoN. And, you know, the two New York graffiti writers that were on staff said, you know, because unfortunately this legendary New York graffiti writer named Is the Wiz died, so they put Is up there. And it could be Is the Wiz, you could read it like that. And they're like, yo, we had to do that. You know, all right. That's collaboration for you, you know. And this wall to the left, Hold Tight, was painted weeks into the project. And, you know, it was pretty, I'm sure it was pretty exasperating for Jane. They have, Mural Arts has a design review, you know, process where they want to kind of look at the designs that are being made and, you know, talk it through with the artist. And me, I just said, I can't do that. I'm just scribbling out cocktail napkins and handing them out to artists. Like, I don't know, you know, come review the designs when they're done. We can talk about it then. If you don't like it, paint it brown. But what was interesting about Hold Tight was we had a lot of resistance. There was a couple of really key walls that we wanted around the 52nd Street area that were really hard to get, and people were being really reluctant to give us permission. But when we did Hold Tight, the paperwork got signed. It really broke the ice, and it was something that really spoke to the neighborhood in a way I really honestly didn't anticipate. But Hold Tight, you know, across generations holds different meanings for different generations. And I meant it, I really wanted the arms to really wrap around the building like it's holding onto the building. I thought it was a little aggressive to paint the fingers wrapping around the brick facade, so we stopped short of doing that. But, you know, it still has that kind of hugging quality to it, but it's doing something else. And for many people from the barbershop to, you know, all the other vendors and the people that are in the area, they all assign their own meaning and value to it, and that's great. That's what you want, right? Next photo. That's Sean. Again, this is a cocktail napkin I just handed him. We're really interested in, first of all, it's, you know, graffiti writers really don't like to paint on bare brick. We love brick walls. Speaking from a graffiti writer perspective, ironically, there's something really, you know, just so beautifully, perfectly urban about a brick wall that, you know, there's really nothing else you can add to it. So we wanted to present this, protect that, and just build on the beauty that was there. I mean, obviously, this was a building that had another structure next to it that got knocked down, and they sealed it with stucco. But all that was ringing to us as beauty, and we love that, and we wanted to preserve that. The woman that owns this building, her name is Miss Peanut. That's how she signed her permission form. And she was a really good sport about it. We actually started painting the wall. We had the address wrong on the permission slip. We started painting the wall. I can see Jane cringing now. And we started painting the wall, and we realized, we forgot. That's actually two doors up. She's like, no, I kind of like what you're doing. I just, you know, I need to sign off on it. It was just really just, oh man, Jane's going to kill me. But she was a good sport, and there was some contention in the neighborhood about the fact that one phrase we heard over and over again was, that's not art, it's just words. And, you know, when people, we had a great presence in the community because we were with the Mural Arts program, but we also had, you know, the fact that we had to live up to the Mural Arts reputation of like huge, you know, glorious Panavision murals, and we were just doing these, you know, type incursions. on these walls. And, you know, a lot of the things that we came back to was, West Philly's beautiful as it is. It doesn't need much. It just needs a little bit. We're just putting a little bit on top of it. So, see me like I see you. A woman from up the block said, that's just broken English. See me like beautiful, I see you. That's not how that should read. So, you know, again, we're you know, one thing that Jane in this project has taught me is pouring spring water, talking to people, talking through. And, you know, by the time you finish explaining what your objective is and what you're trying to get across, you can just see, like, the sunlight in people's faces. They go, oh, yes, I get it, of course. And you can move on to the next problem, which is coming. If you knock somebody's radar dish, or I'm sorry, their disc TV dish, it's $50. You know, the company comes out, they readjust it, and it's a $50 bill. So we learned that right away. We learned that on this wall, and we made it a point not to do it again. You're ever after is all I'm after. And, you know, it's interesting. The last things that you might notice on the wall is that chimney on the far right side that's, like, about to fall over. You'll see a few of those. For the most part, the infrastructure of West Philly is really well maintained. For the fact that it's private residences and people have to pay for their own roofing and their own, you know, their own structural improvements or, you know, maintenance. The gentleman that owns this property, not only did we knock his dish, he said, you put holes in my roof. And I said, if there's a hole in your roof, I'll pass the money for the repair through the hole. If you can't see sunlight, it's not my problem. And no, there wasn't a hole in his roof. You know, the roofs have a substrate on them that's meant to absorb ladders and things like that. So we put some dents in your roof. Fair. But I'm sure they're gone by now. This is meant to say, I'll shape up, but the punctuation disappeared, so now it's ill shape up, which the Heaven Barbershop was really happy with, so everybody wins. Cosign our lifetime, the CO, you really can't see it. You'll have to wait for the hardcover version of the book, but there's a really beautiful a signature of a sign company there, the Thomas Cusack Company. And the CO is much like the CO that we did. And all I could find out about Thomas Cusack was he was a sign painter and a politician, quite the powerful combination, in Chicago, quite the powerful place for that combination. And he died in 1928, so I think most of the real heavy-duty sign painting that was done on the Market Frankford line, the market side of the line, was done in the early teens and 20s of the century when the train line was new. And the concept of, you know, elevated trains, it was still kind of a glorious way to travel. People hadn't gotten bored of it yet. And, you know, obviously cars hadn't come into prominence. So, you know, there were a lot of really glorious advertisements on the line. But the Thomas Cusack Company, I think what they painted there was an advertisement for a big and tall shop that probably wasn't that glorious. And the owner of the building, again, was hoping for a full-on mirror arts treatment, so he was really kind of depressed when he saw the pure graphic lettering. And he's got this beautiful, what's happening in the foreground is he's got this really beautiful garden that's, you know, he's growing green peppers. I'm forced to admit that I think one of my artists borrowed one of his green peppers for his lunch one day. Sorry. But he wanted roses. And he only gave us this cryptic idea that he wanted roses that, he's like, you know, those mastheads when you get letters from people that have roses on them? So left to our own devices, that's what we came up with. And that was enough for him. Like that was enough in the negotiation. And when I asked, just again, it's Josh Smith, when he asked, like, what I wanted, I was like, I don't know, give me some PAGN era roses. Like, give me something that looks like it's from back then. And he took it two steps better than that. So the corn's coming in. It's going to be corn soon. This is the first one that we painted. This is the only one that I painted almost in its entirety. This is a tough sell. I got daycare money and carfare honey. This is what I would present to the community groups as saying, like, this is the tone that I wanted to take. And it was important to bring this out early and say, for starters, that I wanted to paint and spray paint from the beginning because I didn't want people to think I was pulling a fast one and promising sign painting and then using spray paint. And at the same time, I wanted the language to be really contemporary, as if like a 22-year-old was saying this to his amour. And in fact, the entire project, in terms of the entire like storyline, if there is a storyline in these murals, in these signs, it was these two people that, one guy's currently in jail just for being a moron, and his girl who's standing by him, they have a baby together, you know, she's, I don't know, looking at a guy that's going to be away for anywhere from 3 to 6 to 9 years, it's an impossible thing to ask, you know, a woman of 25 to do that. To wait and to be there for him. And the way that he negotiated this, he spent about a year, you know, on the run and trying to raise money. And the way he won her over was to stay with him was by paying the daycare money every week. When he came through 52 times in a row with daycare money, she realized that, you know, he was really serious about it. And this guy really, you know, he couldn't keep anything together on any level. But he got the daycare money together every week. So now his loving girlfriend, baby mama, if you will, makes the 4-hour trip every other week to some place in Pennsylvania and visits him. And it's an 8-hour round trip drive. And she does it every other week and brings daughter to see him. And, you know, there's not a lot of love stories that are... I mean, the world's full of them, but something on that kind of level is just really, it's as depressing as it is inspiring to me, but I think it's really wonderful that they've negotiated that for themselves. It shows a commitment that most people don't have for their loved ones. And it was something, in terms of the context of West Philly, I think that's worth celebrating, because West Philly is a hard place to commit to. I mean, it's beautiful, and I love it, and it's my whole life, but in actuality, I left as soon as I could. As soon as, you know, I was 18 and, you know, I had decisions to make, you know, I went to other parts of the city. As any, I think anybody leaves their home, they would. But the ties that bind are strong. And I, you know, I come back to West Philly with the idea of, like, this is my home. This is what inspired me. This is where I was born. And this is what nurtured me for the early part of my life and still gives me good data and good ideas. And for us to come back to West Philly and make this project happen, you know, it was really important to us. It was something that I think it felt right. It was, it's not a resume builder. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to make me rich. But I think in terms of repaying a debt, I feel I feel really good about it. And it's, you know, it was a long time in coming. And it's really interesting to just all these things that I knew graffiti could have in terms of what it could do for a community, what it could represent for a community, what it could deliver for a community. And using the ideology and the infrastructure of mural arts and their methodology in dealing with the community and reaching with the community and working with the community, you know, combining that with spray paint and with the power of language that the youth are so obsessed with. I mean, the reason why there's, you know, we've talked about it amongst ourselves when the Graffiti League of Champions gets together and we talk about what the hell is going on with graffiti these days. It's all the kids are rapping, you know. The kids are basically just, you know, when in the early 80s, when there was no money in rapping or graffiti, there was kids that would do both. But now that graffiti's not a way of making a living, and rapping is, everybody's rhyming. This mural got painted over as soon as we, maybe a day after we finished it, by a hardworking gentleman at the Anti-Graffiti Network that knew of my work and knew of my approach, and he thought, I just thought you did that for some girl. I saw that, I thought it was graffiti, I thought you were just doing it for some girl. And I was like, that's exactly what I wanted you to think, so I'm not even that mad at you. But didn't you see the mural arts credit? I know you, I thought that was just something you were trying to pull, you're trying to pull a fast one. Because when I found out you were working with mural arts, I was like, wow, that's weird. high five. Next. Having the hold, it's another version of the high five. Rings are involved. Now, there was the terror of Philadelphia, the guy the Anti-Graffiti Network is really after, is a guy named Forever that's painted really terrorizing the city right now with vandalism. And, you know, there's always a 15-year-old in me going, go, Forever, go. But I can really see it being a strain on, you know, the city's resources to have to clean up after him. And Forever knew I was coming, knew I had permission to paint this, and provocatively painted his name right here to test me. And so I rose to the challenge. I painted over it. I tried to, like, get as many permissions. You know, are you sure he's okay with me painting over his name? Yeah, he's fine. So, you know, just to be doubly sure, I painted, you know, his name spelled correctly, not the Prince way. And, of course, there was a curbside confrontation where he came to me and he said, yo, I can't believe you went over it, and what you did was really ugly, and he had some out-of-towners paint it, and I don't like the way it looks, and I'm not sure if I'm going to go over it or not, and I don't know what to, you know. And I just had to talk him through it, again, pouring spring water and saying, it's a tribute to you. You have to understand it's a tribute to you. I know you're out here. I know you would never work with a community or with organizations or with any type of you know, structure. But understand it's a tribute. Can you at least understand it's a tribute, or you just want to, like, give me a hard time? And it really is just, like, there's a core group of Kensington people that will just give you a hard time forever, because it's just what they do. Salute you, Kensington. So I was getting my classic Kensington hard time from the guy. And he's like, well, I haven't decided if I'm going to go over it or not yet. I'll, you know, to be determined. So what he did was, you know, I think he stole a bunch of paint from me from out of the shop. And, like, went up there in broad daylight. And next to it he wrote, is forever. He wrote, so it now reads, forever is forever. He put his, like, tag next to it. And we saw that and we're like, oh, that's pretty cool. Could have destroyed it. Just kind of, he interacted with it. It's a reasonable solution. Thank you. Thank you, Don Forever. Thank you. And that's, you know, I mean, it's, you know, these are the paths that I have to navigate. I mean, I don't want to alienate completely that base of people that I spring from. And it's sometimes I have to pay these ridiculous prices to them to assuage and to let them know that they are important and they're valid and their contributions are great. But at the same time, like, you know, we're moving on. I'm 40 years old. Do I really have to be in a graffiti beef with you? Like, this is ridiculous. The officers don't mind. This is really closest to, like, the painting that I do when I'm left alone in my studio. The top two arms say give and take. The bottom two arms say want and need, and they're meeting each other. And then in the center it says, to, till, by and by, which is the unspecified point in time, or bye-bye. So we give, and we take, we want, and we need till that unspecified point in time, or we just decide it's not worth it anymore, and we move on. So that's a whole pictograph of your relationship in one two-story building. When we did the daycare car fair wall, the owner of the property down the block said, well, if you're advertising the daycare across the street, when you paint my wall, you should advertise the tattoo parlor across from the wall. And I said, well, it's not really advertising the daycare, but I can understand what you're saying, so let's work with that. And there's a So I took the most famous tattooed arm in Philadelphia history after Ben Franklin, Allen Iverson. And, you know, Allen Iverson's tattoo, the only one that has any real love quotient is "Hold My Own," which is great. And we got rid of the rest, which were like skulls smoking joints and like, I don't know, it's terrible. And, you know, we painted this arm. There's a popular phrase from an old documentary about graffiti, off-quoted one, that says, "Everyone's got their own arrow," which, you know, literally, you could say in pointing. It's also like this classic advertising device to have the finger pointing, like, you know, sail this way. So it was fun to, like, combine those two things in this way. And I honestly found a picture of Allen Iverson pointing at something, like, online in, like, 4 seconds. JR, when we were presenting this to the property owner, he said, "Oh, it'd be great if you had JR's face on there." JR was a leader of the Wheels of Soul. This is the Wheels of Soul I'm negotiating with. If you don't know, they are America's preeminent, predominantly African-American, 1% outlaw motorcycle gang. What I love, among their many things that I love about them, when they have prospects, you know, when a Wheels of Soul, when you want to join the Hell's Angels, let's say, they call you a prospect. When you want to join the Wheels of Soul, they call you a suspect, which I thought was always pretty cool. And you had to wear these jackets that just said suspect on it, which, you know. And I had painted this very roof in 1989 and had permission from the property owner, who owned a beer distributor at the time, and had a great interaction with the Wheels of Soul the time that we were painting this. And it was a really good time and very interesting. And in coming back to this, like, that was first of, that was, you know, up front and when we were doing this. So we really want to deliver something that was really helpful and useful to the Wheels of Soul, because they have been there. They are an institution on Market Street. So we got JR's face on there, we got the tattoo, and then it says, "Hey baby, please," and it's got a messenger pigeon with the message on its sign that says, "Please holler back." So voila. They should really get that chimney fixed, though. I don't think Santa's coming down that chimney in the front. Well, I should say in the mid-ground. Yeah, and on top of... that's fine. Well, I go back one, actually. I'll finish that joke. "This love will fade, Neverwary first." I wasn't sure where Neverwary came from. It's one of those like words that's just been hanging around. But there's a great... Earth, Wind, and Fire song, where they talk about the 12th of Never. So it's obviously from that. Next one. This is above a church on 59th Street. It's a really pleasant-looking storefront church called Church of the Apostles that we had two meetings at. That the room only holds about 30 people. So if you've got 15 people in there and they're getting really upset at your promoting murals that only have words and there's not enough community involvement, it's kind of a hot box for tension. And it was a great place where the whole muralist philosophy really came into play, where I really had to like turn on the charm and really try to hear out what people were saying and deliver something that they could use. And it was really being peppered with questions for an hour, including questions like, "Why has it got to be all words? What about the people that can't read?" You know, things like that. But, you know, going back to that one just for 1.5 seconds, what's really cool about that is, for most of Market Street, when you're on the ground, you can only see, like, corners of these walls. So when you see the number 3 in a series and the "You and Me," it's a lighthouse that says "You and me, I'm out to sea and potentially drowning, and you're there for me." You know, you see the church and you see this one little piece of color and this message there, and it works perfectly. Driving down Market Street, and it was always like this growing up, you'd see these little Technicolor flashes, and we've put that back into place, which I think is really cool. It's, you know, it's not so much the billboard presence that is as good as just when you're not looking for it, you just get these little glimpses of color. And I'm sure that happens with Mural Arts murals when you're just like, see something like 6 blocks away. But it's happening in real time in a place where there's really just not that much color. Okay. Next. "I got the butter, I got the bread, I got the milk, I got the blame." I got it all. This is a sly shout out to one of the greatest, most awful graffiti walls in Philadelphia history, equally great and awful, that said David got the butter, and it was at 8th and Butler. When 8th and Butler was really notorious, there was just an advertisement for a drug dealer painted at the base of a wall, just in script graffiti, that said David got the butter. And you would know, if you were a savvy shopper, David was the guy who purchased your cocaine from. So in the course of the project, I really wanted to take all these negative elements of graffiti and just, you know, it was like just splicing out all the negative elements and keeping the things that were real and true. And as a shout out to, okay, I don't have that butter anymore. What I have is this butter, the butter that, you know, I can put on toast, can nourish you with. So it was just also showing that, like, you know, we have to transcend all those negative states if we're really going to do something with this expression. The Wonder Bread, I don't think you can get that kind of Wonder Bread with that fancy, funny face on it. But and they on the milk carton, it does say missing, and it's got the heart. So there's something contemporary about that, I guess. And spilt milk, hey, never goes out of style. I'll stay on point for you. I'm sorry, I'll stay on point for life. Rebus. For what I want, I can wait. I'll wait 4,800 years if I have to. And that's on the 4,800 block of Market. That is actually 4,800 Market Street. And they're really working hard to make that a functioning nightclub again. And hopefully that'll help. There was a woman at Zoe Strauss, who's one of two photographers along with Adam Wildcabbage. Adam shot all these wonderful photos. Zoe's on a different track where she's shooting more of people in the neighborhood and these really kind of insane, incongruent things that happen with people in place. And this, she found this beautiful woman wearing this I Love You chain medallion that we immediately just took and we put in this location at 60th Street. And again, this is one of those locations, since we did it close to the corner, it like peeks off the side of the roof when you're on the street. And savvy graffiti writers will spot the BAK tag on the chimney that somehow survived. JR didn't catch that one. One of our guiding West Philly heroes in graffiti. Hi, badass Kevin. Glad to see you're still there. Next. What's missing from this is, I want you like coffee. I need you like juice. Oh, I won't put you on the side like bacon, and you can have me over easy. That was a really hard one to get permission for. It was at the top of the Conqueror's Cafe, formerly the Galaxy Diner at 63rd and Market. But Pastor Parks and everybody was really thrilled with this one. So thank you, Darren. This is this one was definitely really enjoyable for us, and I think really pushed the our agenda far as we could in terms of really pushing the wordplay and really embracing something close to a New York sensibility of just it's all fair. At the same time, I had to look for a poem structure that would work. I found a structure called the alphabet poem that. It's four lines that you can start with any letter and has to be sequential and has to be, in this case, it's K-L-M-N. And the last word can be any letter. So it says, knocked on your door, legs tired, back sore, migraine for sure, no more I swore, you smile, I'm cured. And, you know, I spent 2 days negotiating with the block captain with this mural. And what it really came down to was, she said, that makes the building look ugly. And I said, no, the broken windows in the front of the building make the building look ugly. This is doing something else. And she really, again, wanted to know why we weren't painting the entire building. And I told her, I said, the building is really beautiful. Even the weird, you know, aluminum siding over the windows that we're painting, And I really want to preserve that. I just want to add to it. And she says, well, we need a doctor's office there. What are you going to do about that? And I was like, well, if there's something about a migraine on a doctor's office, maybe that's good marketing for each other. And they actually, the first day we were painting this, it looked like it had been abandoned for 15 years. But apparently there's a couple ladies engaged in some kind of skin trade on the second floor. And the van showed up on the first floor on the second day, and they just started clearing it out. So this could change, or this could be embraced by the building owner as something really great and he wants to hold on to. We'll see what happens. I mean, it's a really, I think the next photo, there's another shot of it. It's a really insanely beautiful, transformative work that does a lot of things. Especially in talking about this, you know, in talking about the love letter, you know, it's not all Hallmark Valentine's. It has to be like the give and take of, you know, what's really involved in relationships. And it's a lot of work. And it's a lot of, it's not all sweet. There's definitely migraines involved. So, you know, this is, you know, West Philadelphia has a lot of amazing architecture, and it's got a lot of bad architecture like this. But where it says legs tired, back sore, that was put there specifically in the construction of this building for advertising. Otherwise, there'd be more windows right on the corner of the street to get in as much light as possible. The only reason why that is a flat cement surface is so some huge sign could be put there advertising the business on the first floor that's probably, at the time, was owned and operated by an owner that lived above it and had his family on top of the second and third floor above it. So to me, it's interesting in looking at this community and knowing sign painting and knowing advertising and knowing marketing and knowing art, knowing what these spaces were and how they were supposed to be negotiated, you know, for the generations before this. Before, you know, now it'd be interesting to see West Philly come back to a level of mercantile might and style, you know, this really great commercial style that we're kind of hearkening to with this project. You know, we'll see what happens. We'll just fake it till we make it. We'll put the imagery in place. And what we fully expect to happen, I've already gotten emails from people that they source out spots for a living for companies like Coca-Cola. Much in the way that Jane is a wall hunter and Mural Arts Lake finds great walls, you know, commercial interests are already looking at these properties going, oh, okay, well, now that they have a full 30-block stretch locked down, in 3 years maybe we'll take the full 30-block stretch and lock it down for ourselves. And all these property owners will get new checks 3 years from now, and we'll move on. Look, 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 look. Any way you want, as long as it's at me. See? Like that. Meet me on 52nd, if only for 50 seconds. Again, in using the... let's go back one. In using the... in realizing... It took me a full week of working on this project that I realized that... Well, when we were actually working on this project, that I said, well, we're working with a city agency. Anti-Graffiti's a city agency. They've got boom trucks and power sprayers. Maybe we can borrow their boom trucks and power sprayers. And that's how we got to know the supervisors and the hardworking guys at the anti-graffiti program. And we got to realize that they really have the most genius marking device in history. It's a $3,500 paint sprayer. We were able to paint, that's probably a 25-foot tall by 80-foot long wall. We were able to paint in about 45 minutes or an hour of black, the black. And the Miss You, the original script I did with the power sprayer, and then we cut back with the orange roller paint. And then I did the white of the train with it. And then the rain came and washed it all down the wall. But until then, it was flawless. And it ended up looking really great. Problem was, we can only paint this with an 80-foot lift, which is a very expensive $800 a day lift. And all the building owner, gracious as he was, what he wanted was, on that little white square to the left, he wanted his website address put on there, and we spelled it wrong. So we had to get the lift back for another $800. But the good thing about the $800 lift is they don't like to pick it up right away, so we actually got like a couple days use out of it to almost justify the expense, almost. But the problem with sign painting is you lock yourself into a groove and you stop looking at what you're painting, and that's what happens. Mistakes happen. I had a nice dream about us. This is based on a piece of graffiti that was there 30 years ago. We borrowed the color scheme, the general je ne sais quoi, and joie de vie, and did our own thing with it. Try to make something, again, legible that people could own for themselves. The writer, one of the great exceptions, his name is Clyde. He's still around. All he asked was that I mention that he is Clyde, and he's still around. Thanks, Clyde. Open your eyes. I see the sunrise with a little sun peeking out there. And ultimately, the roots just become about the clouds. Like, we put something there to give us some work to do and give you something to look at. But when we're taking the picture and we're actually up there, we're looking at it, when we stop looking at the wall like halfway through and we just look at these insane expanses of sky and clouds that are above us. And that's really what the L train always represented to me, was the L train navigates kind of as this great Icarus line between the street level and all the anxiety and problems of dealing with the street and the great hope and promise of the infinite that's above us. And the L train kind of skirts between it, where it's not too high to forget about the street, but it's, you know, still above all those problems and all those things that are the reality of living on street level. So I've always had this really romantic notion about the L train and that. And I always thought the rooftops were kind of, you know, there as these spaces between, even between the train and the sky. And, you know, it was a place where you could realize dreams and make dreams happen. And we have, obviously, thanks to Paula and the Pew and the Muir Arts Program facilitating it. Yeah, like that. We're also interested in the sign painting tradition of West Philadelphia. This is West End Furniture at 5215 Market Street. And that sign is probably from the 20s. They were using V's in place of the U's on the furniture in the classic Roman way. And we put our words in place on top of it just to kind of interact with it and just, you know, build on what was already there. And it's on top of a camera shop, which they thought the cameras are cool, but they wanted you to know that they're also a studio. They can do weddings and stuff. Prepay is on. Let's talk to my minutes are gone. Our store manager, his name is James Jones. He's from 61st and Cedar. He approached me as I was starting the project, introduced himself, and, you know, expressed his deep desire to get down with the project and paint. He tore his Achilles tendon before we started painting, and he's still recovering from it. So he's on administrative duties in the office, and he's working with a prepay phone that when he ran out of minutes and he had a tore Achilles tendon, he couldn't do anything about it. But it set this mural up, and we were able to get his phone turned back on, and it inspired this piece. And after we painted it, we got an angry phone call from the property owner. And I went to visit her to hear her concerns. And she pulled out a picture of what she thought should be on the wall. And it was Barack Obama in front of the White House. It was like a photo montage. With like a youth, the back of a youth with his pants sagging. And had the words, "This house is a dress code. Pull your pants off." And then really, in a long artistic career of dealing with clients, this is the first time a client actually asked for something more aggressive than I put on the table. This is a great example of when, you know, working with the community sometimes goes wrong and right. We are set to paint this post-it note. We're actually going to add a couple more post-it notes to this wall as soon as we can. But I just wanted to say really like a jotted you know, reminder to yourself, remember the good. And this woman walked by and she said, what's that going to say? And I said, it's going to say, remember the good. She says, no, you can't put that up there. So scurried down off the lift, you know, approached her, introduced myself, explained the project, asked her what her concerns were. You know, she was living on the block. And she said, it's not about the good. It's about, you know, it's not always about the good. You got to remember this. You got to learn the lessons. You know what it should say? It should say something like, divorce is good. Okay, maybe divorce is good for you, but can we open up the floor? Maybe we can get some other suggestions. And she says, all right, well, ask this guy over here. And there was a, you know, a 13-year-old youth named Nasir that we had seen. And he just looked like one of these. He really looked like a kind of a stray cat kind of a kid that was just like halfway hunted and, you know, a little shy of himself. But he had a great presence. And we asked him, we were like, what should this say? It should say remember something. I've already painted remember, so we got to work with that. And he said, sometimes it hurts, sometimes it doesn't. Okay, that's great. Perfect. From the mouths of children, you're great. You know, we should find some way, you should intern with us. We should work together somehow. This is wonderful. So we painted his words up there. And I asked the woman, I was like, tell me about, you know, the community and how long you've been here. She says, I've been here 2 months. I hate this place. I'm going back to Delaware County. Like, oh, great. Really glad we got your input. Well, at least, you know, thanks for introducing us to Nasir. That worked out great. This love is real, so dinner is on me. A veggie patty or a ravioli. I don't know how real that love is, if it's only meriting a veggie patty, but so be it. But that's on top of the, Italo Jamaican restaurant at 12 North 52nd Street. So we put a little line of Judah in the corner, just peeking over the side. And it's really great. The colors match the Cricut phone place on the corner, so it's doing good work. We share defeats. That L is meant to represent the loss that we take. We take that, it's ours. We'll show you more of that in a second. Next. We share receipts. And the next one in that line, it's out of order, but it's my fault. It says, we share defeats, we share receipts with the bag of money, and finally, we share the sheets. Yeah, and that's a great view from about 62nd Street of it's coming together in the neighborhood. And here we are, creatively speaking. Thank you. Sorry that went on so long. Any questions? No? Great. Well, thanks so much.